This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for listening. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for copying. So what's the original? What's the copy? Can you tell? Neither? Both? We're going to explore the technology and philosophy of our growing expertise at making copies of all kinds. You have no idea if this is a copy or a live program. Since you've been hearing it for the first time, and this is the first time I am speaking on the radio this week, maybe this isn't original. But what if I'm a copy, part of some program that allows you to take pieces of my voice and assemble them into words I might say, words that just might fool you? Today, a full hour look at Anne Hathaway's hair.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by.
See, now you're starting to doubt. I mean, I wouldn't do that show. You know that, no matter how pleased my teenage fan daughters would be. We are, though, completely accustomed to this idea of copying. Ever since Xerox developed a way to scan existing documents and print nearly exact duplicates, print the duplicates rather than merely transcribe them by machine as readable alternatives like mimeograph or carbon copies.
When we say the Xerox 914 makes copies on ordinary paper, we mean ordinary paper. For instance, office stationery. Or how about plain bond paper? Now, if that isn't ordinary enough, wait a minute.
What Xerox began in the 1960s, we are still working out. It's a revolution. The idea that each original contains enough information to make a copy that comes close to the usefulness of the original is a revolution. The quality of the scan determines the quality of the copy if the technology is right. From two-dimensional copies on paper, it's a small step to three dimensions using plastic or even metal. Or stepping from paper to plastic to metal to living tissue, printed, alive, and ready to be transplanted into a donor. Kinko's meets the hospital, meets the surgeon. Lawrence Bonasar is a professor of biomedical engineering at Cornell University. He and some colleagues recently printed an actual living human ear, part of a project to use printing technology to create all kinds of transplantable tissues. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Don.
So what is the complication here of printing in 3D and then printing living tissue? Because on some level, you are fooling the tissue around it into believing that it's just like the tissue that it would have generated itself.
Well, as you said, we've been looking at printing things in three dimensions for 10 or 15 years now. So the technology to precisely deposit materials in two dimensions and in three dimensions is something that is, I won't say common, but it's technologically achievable. We think that the real leap forward here has been over the past 5 or 10 years in figuring out how to make that toner or ink out of living tissue, out of living materials that contain cells within them.
Now, if you print a living ear, does that mean you also print the blood supply that feeds that ear? Or is it just a cosmetic, you know, not unlike a rubber ear that you'd put on for a theatrical use?
Well, so there are several important differences between that rubber ear and what we've developed and what we reported on recently. The main structural part of the outer part of the ear is made out of cartilage. The cartilage is actually one of the few tissues in the body that does not have a very large blood supply. So in the ear, the cartilage receives its nutrients from all the blood supply of the tissue around it. And that's one of the reasons why this is particularly technically achievable right now. But that doesn't mean that ear cartilage is not alive. It develops, it remodels, and this is one of the reasons why we believe that these generations of implants will last far, far longer than, say, a rubber ear.
And cartilage, of course, has applications in the joints and the skeletal system. They've had trouble with coming up with an effective lining for artificial hips and artificial joints of one kind or another. Is there an application here?
For sure. So cartilage is a very interesting tissue. It's found all over our body. It's found, as you say, it lines the bones in our joints. It provides us with a flexibility to move our spines. A lot of the tissues that give us important features in our face, like the nose and the ear, as well as in parts of the respiratory system, like the trachea. Cartilage is really all over our body, and it's slightly different in each place, but the same general principles apply. So it is certainly applicable to, say, repairing cartilage in joints for something like arthritis treatment. The challenge there is that the mechanical loading is much more challenging in a joint than it is, say, in an ear.
So are you printing actual living tissue, or are you printing more of a scaffold where cells attach and then become living over time, or living in the way that we understand them?
No, so we are printing directly living tissue. So that's actually been one of our goals for the past decade or so. As you say, there is an approach to tissue engineering and regenerative medicine that involves printing or some other way processing a scaffold and then introducing cells to it at some later time. Whereas what we're doing is having the material that comes out of the printer contain cells right at the time that it's printed. So as it sits there in the printer or as it comes out of a mold, the material itself is alive.
Beyond cartilage, could you print brain tissue? Could you print skin tissue? Could you print heart tissue?
So you alluded to one of the challenges of all of those things, and that is making sure that if we were to print those kinds of tissues, that when we implanted them in the body, that they would get vascularized and they would get the proper nutrients.
You mean blood supply?
That is correct. And so printing neurons or printing heart cells or printing any other kind of cell that you think about can be achieved now. We've printed dozens of cell types with our printer. The materials that we use for printing, the ink, if you will, is very hospitable to any of those cells. So the challenge is assembling them in the right configuration and implanting them under the conditions that will allow them to be vascularized, grow blood vessels as quickly as possible.
Lawrence Benasser, how much federal support do you get for this research?
So actually, the EAR project has been primarily funded by Cornell University, but we're hoping to get some federal support soon.
Lawrence Benasser is a professor of biomedical engineering at Cornell University, part of a project that managed to print a living human ear using printing technology and the development of these sorts of tissue inks that he was just describing. Lawrence, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So how much of a revolution is 3D printing, and where are its applications outside of biology? Joining us now is Max Lebovsky, co-founder of Formlabs, a startup company that is creating a more affordable professional 3D printer. Max, welcome.
Hi.
Well, I'd sure love to go through your garbage can one of these days, don't you think? I bet you have some amazing stuff in there. Describe the kinds of machines that you're working with and how accessible and small could they eventually get?
Sure. So we're at Formlabs. We're working on the Form 1, which is a high-resolution desktop 3D printer. And we're selling it now for $3,300. It's a desktop printer, kind of sort of similar size to a small kind of office printer you might have. And so what we think we've done is made the first sort of printer that has similar capabilities to the printers that used to cost tens of thousands of dollars, but make it affordable for an individual user or professional and easy to use.
I mean, if you think about the merging of social media technology and this printing capability, I mean, you could literally post 3D kiss online or something like that. I'm trying to imagine what my teenagers would do with this sort of thing. How do you envision this as a real social transformative kind of revolution?
Well, I think it's about empowering a greater group of people to be creators and sort of taking our economic system today where there's this sort of a small group of people who can produce and wider audience consuming mass-produced versions of that good and flattening that distribution out a little bit and getting much more people creating new products, new ideas, things like that.
If there were tens of thousands of these printers out in home offices with young people just sort of messing around, what domain do you think would have the greatest impact first?
I think one place we see a lot of new uses is sort of consumer electronics, people printing custom cases or holders or things like that for electronics.
And what have you done?
What I've done, I've sometimes I print gifts for people. It's definitely a really good way. I'm not actually terribly artistically skilled myself, but it's a great way to make a interesting looking, unique product. Because 3D printers, it's not just about being able to print. Create a one-off product quickly, but you can also make very unusual shapes that you can't make any other way.
Have you 3D printed your face?
I have not actually 3D printed my face on the Form 1, but I should do that, I guess.
You should. You should. Yeah. Or, just keep it with your face, right, Max?
I'll keep it with the face.
There's other people in the office who can try out some other interesting shapes, right? And again,
it's happened before.
It's happened before with some of your machines?
Yes.
And it doesn't hurt the machine?
It doesn't hurt the machine, no.
But it's not recommended. Max, what price do you envision getting this down to below $3,000? $500, is that a possibility?
It's definitely a possibility. If you look at what's in the machine right now, it doesn't look that much different from a couple $100 2D printer. We've just got to get to the volumes necessary to get there.
Max Lubovsky is co-founder of Form Labs, a startup company that is creating a more affordable professional 3D printer. Thanks, Max.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.